Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
And Ron isn't with us this week, and I'm Jean Marie.
Yeah, there goes that script.
Yep.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Dr. Joan, and I should have asked before the show, Is it Ifland or Ifland?
It's Ifland, just like it's spelled
if Ifland.
Land.
Okay. Dr. Ifland is a bit of a Renaissance woman. In 2010, she received her PhD from the Union Institute and University in Cincinnati, Ohio, with an emphasis in addiction nutrition. She also earned an MBA. Oh, yeah. She's not sitting down.
Nope.
From Stanford, and a Bachelor of Arts degree in economics and political science. Ethics in research were in 20, excuse me.
So in addition, she's also.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
She's also been studying ethics and research.
Okay.
Neuroscience.
Thank you.
Drugs and society.
Uh-huh.
Italian language studies.
Ciao.
Yeah. And she's joining us today to talk about processed food addictions. And welcome to the show, Joan.
Thanks for saving me, Jean.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much.
Good save.
And Joan, this is Jean Marie. If I'm ever on the game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, do you mind if I call you as my call a friend for help?
Because you have a wealth of information.
Exactly. Your breadth of knowledge is extensive. And we really
Get into the interview, you'll see why.
Okay.
And this is all obviously orchestrated from somewhere above. But when we get into the interview, you'll see why that business background is so important and why the political background is so important.
Okay. All right.
It all fits together. And it's not, you really can't understand what's going on unless you know what the different players are doing.
Sure. Sure.
I can understand
that. Yeah, and food is a business. So I could definitely see how that comes into play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Joan, what inspired you to begin with to pursue a career in processed food addiction?
Well, I say it started when I was born. I was born to two addicted people.
Okay.
And our family's particular reaction to processed foods is rage.
And
out of control behavior,
like
an alcoholic's response.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a very rageful household. Then when I had my two children in 83 and 84, I was just desperate that there not be raging in our household, but there I was raging. So I did personal therapy. I learned everything about my childhood issues and I was still raging. I was also yo-yo dieting, and I did a women's group, a women's healing group. I trained with them and became a leader in that organization, still raging. I went to a codependency group, still raging. But somebody in the codependency group heard it. She heard the kind of behavior that's driven by sugar.
Okay.
So I, yo-yo dieting. Couldn't do the restricted calories anymore. And I joined a food addiction recovery group. And within 3 weeks, all I did was eliminate sugars and flours. But within 3 weeks, the raging had stopped.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was hooked on a new career. I had my nice, lovely, prestigious Stanford MBA. I had worked for 5 years in a Fortune 200 corporation on their finance staff. And then when I had my two kids, I quit. And then I was too sick to go back. The allergies and the fatigue and the brain fog and the constant sinus infection, I couldn't go back to work. And it all cleared up. It all cleared up when I got off the sugars and flours.
That's an amazing.
So that was my new career.
That's like a big aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was like winning the lottery every day. The cravings were gone. The brain fog was gone. The fatigue was gone. The irritability was gone. The sinus infection was gone. The allergies were gone. The bloating was gone. And these were things that I had been told I I'd have for the rest of my life.
Hmm.
And then they were just gone. Okay. So I just wanted to tell everybody, I didn't really understand addiction at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to my family, I'm not going to give you these foods anymore. Here are the foods I will give you. And they circled everything and I gave them those foods and they got better. The kids lost weight. Their grades came way up. They were able to focus on their work. They became popular at school because they had this nice, even disposition. You know, they ran for class offices and
amazing.
Became heads of their sports teams.
Wow.
They got into, you know, top 10 universities in very competitive years. But I thought to myself at the time, I thought, this isn't fair. I'm going to tell the other moms
sure.
to eliminate these sugars and flours from their kids' diets. And because I just thought, wow, you know, my kids are the only clear-headed kids in the school. Nobody could do it.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember the movie that Robin Williams was in? Where they were in a institution for people that were mentally
ill. Oh, yes.
And they gave them some
Oliver Stone.
Right? And they gave them some type of a new medication, and it woke everybody up. And it was like overnight, like from gone to awaken. And that's what it sounds like your story is.
I think that was the name of the movie, Awakened.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go.
It was based on an Oliver Stone book.
Okay. Yeah,
yes.
And that's,
know,
and that's what Lita, triggered that, in my mind. It sounds like such a powerful, powerful message.
Oh, man.
Yeah, see that.
And it never quits. There have been moments when I was so terrified I would lose it. And I did lose it at one point. It's an addiction.
Okay.
So,
all right, well, we'll continue.
That's a very apt analogy.
That's a great start for this story.
Well, let's take a step back.
Okay.
And Joan, what exactly is a processed food?
So there are seven primary categories. And that's one of the reasons why this addiction is so hard to beat. If you're just addicted to alcohol, for example, only your dopamine pathway is hyperactivated. But these seven, they're really chemicals. They're not really food. They activate all four of the major addiction pathways. So you're really addicted.
I mean,
the cravings are really intense and we're helpless to fight them. So it's any kind of a sweetener. When a sweetener or a salt touches a taste bud, it's a half second until the brain reacts. Processed fats, when fats touch the roof of the mouth, it's a half a second until the brain is impacted, as opposed to like nicotine or other drugs where it takes 10 seconds or 10 minutes. So that's a huge impact on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So flour, processed carbohydrates that have been turned into a powder. They get into the bloodstream very quickly. They ignite a serotonin response. Gluten, excessive salt, and dairy have all been shown to activate the same pathway in the brain as opium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are the opiate pathways, and they're named after the fact that opium activates them. And then there's the fats also activate the cannabis, the same pathway as cannabis. So the brain is being conditioned in the same way that it is by recreational drugs. Okay. And then you have food additives.
Mm-hmm.
And the same people who manufactured cigarettes are now manufacturing processed foods. And we know that they extracted and concentrated nicotine, put it back into the cigarettes to make them addictive. And we have one other study showing that they added substances to cigarettes to make them addictive. So this is just a basic rule in the addiction business playbook. Add stuff, hide stuff in the product until people are addicted.
Okay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you're not going to see in a commercial.
No.
Oh.
No. And you see, it's kind of interesting, but you see the top three fast food, you know, genres are combinations of all seven of those,
mm-hmm.
which are the Mexican, the taco style, the pizza style, and the burger style.
Mm-hmm.
And then a distant fourth is our Asian or Oriental style dishes. And they don't have cheese, typically. So I think that's why they're not quite so popular.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the dairy really kind of puts it over the edge, maybe?
Yes, there are four different natural casomorphines in dairy. So dairy is a substance that's very specifically created to put a baby cow to sleep. So it's a pretty heavy narcotic.
Makes sense.
So that baby cow will absorb nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
Human breast milk also has morphine in it. It's designed to put that baby to sleep so the baby will absorb the nutrients. However, not surprisingly, dairy turns on a weight gain gene. Like, duh, yeah, you want 500 pounds to go on that baby calf in 1 year.
Okay,
so
okay.
It's a really not a great product for humans.
Mm-hmm. And actually, we recently talked about food reactions in another episode and how I think it was like 80% of individuals don't have the enzymes at the level to digest, right, to digest dairy.
It turns on a prostate cancer gene. It turns on an acne gene. It turns on a diabetes gene. It's a mess.
Wow.
People have a really hard time giving it up because it's also got a little bit of salt in it and lactose, which is a sweet taste, and fat. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a perfect storm of addiction.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not see that one coming, to be honest. The other ones... The other ones on the list, I could kind of understand, but I did not see, I did not see salt or dairy.
It's excessive salt.
Okay.
Has been shown to activate that opiate pathway.
Okay.
You need salt.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The salt-free stuff also has its own problems because you don't have enough electrolytes.
Right.
So people who are no salt diets are in just as much trouble as people with excessive salt.
Okay. There's got to be a balance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, and Joan, if someone's thinking, boy, you know, that sounds like everything that I'm craving on a daily basis, and I know that's what my mom is thinking right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm wondering, how do you know for sure that you have a processed food addiction? What are some indicators?
Okay, good. We do have a self-quiz on our website.
Good.
So I don't know if you guys can just cut this if this is inappropriate.
No, please.
Yes,
feel free.
And see, this is what we're going to be doing with the video.
Right. But we will have a link if you want to tell us about that, and we'll have a link on our website then.
Yes.
And include that as well.
All right.
So I did my doctoral dissertation on this very issue. Could you adopt the diagnostic criteria for alcoholism to eating? And would it be valid? Would it create a valid questionnaire?
Mm-hmm.
So the American Psychiatric Association has been working on diagnoses for addictions for 50 years. And they now have 11 manifestations, 11 signs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're offering is not a diagnosis,
right?
But you can just determine whether you're experiencing the signs. And I'll go through them. There are 11 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is unintended use. So you wake up and you say, today I'm going to eat clean. By 10 o'clock, you're eating something you didn't plan to. You're going to drive straight home without stopping for fast food, and you're stopping for fast food. You're going to take two out of the box, and somehow the box disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all examples of unintended use.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody has these. Mm-hmm. As you listen to these, bear in mind, six or more is a severe addiction.
Okay,
so most people have number one, unintended use. Number two, failure to cut back. And everybody's got that.
Mm-hmm.
They try to cut back, they lose the weight, and then they regain it. Number three is time spent. Increasingly, you notice that you're thinking about food all the time. You're stopping for it. You're planning it. You're eating it, you're sleeping it off, you're getting up in the middle of the night to get it, You only go to events where you know the food's going to be good. So increasing amounts of time spent. Number four is cravings. Everybody has cravings. Mm-hmm. And the food industry flaunts this. You know, the bet you can't eat just one is unintended use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just looked at a product in a store the other day, and on the back of it said, highly addictive.
Oh. So it's a marketing
industry that knows that the addiction accusations are coming, mm-hmm. and they're valid.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're trying to do is neutralize the, they're trying to make it acceptable mm-hmm. to have an addiction. Yeah. So that's number four is cravings. Number five is failure to fulfill roles. So you're too big to get down on the floor with your kids and you're still eating. Or your brain fog and your fatigue are so intense that you're not going to apply for that promotion and you're still eating. Or you have, we have people dropping out of school all the time because they can't do the work. So mm-hmm. failure to fulfill roles.
Okay.
Number six is relationship problems. Somebody wants me to stop eating. I can't. I'm fighting with my relationship person so often that, and I'm eating over it. I don't want to connect with this person because I'd rather go in the laundry room and eat what I stashed there. It's hard to connect because I'm so tired. I'm so depressed. I'm so fatigued and I'm still eating. The next one is activities given up. I don't want to go because those people are going to see that I gained weight. I don't want to go because I'd rather go home and eat. Activities given up. And then hazardous use. So normally hazardous use is about driving drunk. Well, we are driving, you know, with our elbows while we're shoveling in the, mm-hmm. the fast food, or we're so big we can't see the curb anymore. We tend to fall and we're still eating. The next one is a use in spite of knowledge of consequences, which everybody has. Everybody started to eat something with, well, I know I shouldn't, but.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's tolerance, increasing amounts. So you used to eat something in the evening. Now you're eating it at lunch and at evening. Now you're eating it at breakfast and at evening. You used to stop for fast food once a week. Now you're stopping once a day or three times a day. You used to buy this size and now you're buying a bigger size.
Mm-hmm.
Or you used to buy it, it used to be in the kitchen and now it's in the kitchen and the bedroom and the den. That's how you kind of gauge that you're eating more of something.
Sure.
And then the last one is withdrawal. And you can gauge that because you're eating for a reason other than hunger.
Okay.
You're eating because you have a headache or because mm-hmm. you have a stomach ache or because you're angry or because you're depressed or because you're tired. That is withdrawal avoidance. Okay. You're heading into withdrawal.
As soon as you mentioned that, I was wondering why isn't caffeine one of the categories?
It should be. I forgot to mention that. Very
okay.
good.
Okay.
Very good.
Because I know I'm addicted to caffeine, so I know.
Oh gosh, it's a nasty drug.
Yeah.
It's a nasty drug. When I see it being given to children, I just want.
When you said something like, you're going to do it. You're going to eat this. Or you're going to process this because you have a headache. If I don't have a Diet Coke or something with caffeine, a tea or something, I will get a headache. But it's, uh-huh. and I am quite aware of the fact that it's the fact that I'm addicted to the caffeine that's causing the headache. I'm aware mm-hmm. of that. But mm-hmm. do I have the strength to stop until the headaches dissipate? No, because I'm a weak.
No,
person.
Well, I think we'll get
there. No, you're not weak.
We'll
you are not weak. Okay. I just want to really, if we can just stop here. Because an addiction is an addiction, people have developed all this mythology around why they do things.
Mm-hmm.
We do things because we have these hyperactivated reward system brain cells.
Okay.
That's it.
Right.
And there's treatment for it.
Okay.
There's recovery for it.
Okay.
So all of this mythology, childhood issues, self-sabotage, not trying hard enough, don't like myself, not enough willpower. Those are all just nonsense. You've got some hyperactivated reward center of brain cells. That's all.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So give yourself a break.
All right.
Yeah. So stop that self-blame, because the diet industry obviously has completely failed to recognize this. And therefore, 99.9% of people regain weight after losing it. And then the diet industry or the health industry blames the individual. You don't want this bad enough.
Right.
You're spiritually bankrupt.
Right.
It's not an addiction. And you, practitioner, you haven't been trained in this. So you're frustrated and I'm frustrated. And we're both traumatized by not being able to fix this.
And it does seem that a number of commercially available diets are they're just processed foods. They're just another form of processed food.
Yes. So all these big manufacturers have bought reduced calorie processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just as addictive and devastating, destructive.
Mm-hmm.
We have 141 diseases associated with processed foods. This is 10 times worse than cigarettes. And yet, the processed food manufacturers just grab on to every opportunity. Processed gluten-free, processed low-calorie,
mm-hmm.
processed fat-free. It's all destructive, it's all addictive, and it's all incredibly deceptive.
Okay. I guess I'm going to ask a deep question here, something that only a doctor would be able to answer. What makes processed foods so addictive? And also, what are some of the most addictive? Wait, is that what the question was?
Yeah, okay. Addictive foods.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's the concentrating.
Okay.
So plants have natural endorphins in them. It's not like you eat just to survive. You eat because it's pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
There is this little, pleasurable release in those reward systems in the brain. And as long as you're eating all the fiber and you're crunching and chewing a lot and it's getting into your system slowly, no problem.
Okay.
Like if you've ever tried to chew an oat kernel, you have to chew for a really long time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the fiber out, which speeds up absorption, and then you grind it into a powder,
mm-hmm.
which means it's going to get into your system all at once, that's enough to create a concentrated release of those pleasurable neurotransmitters.
Okay.
And then you're literally getting a high,
mm-hmm.
which that brain cell cannot sustain. So it's followed by a crash.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unpleasant to not have enough pleasurable neurotransmitters in your brain. And then you crave it. Your brain just like, oh my gosh, can we get that dopamine back up, please?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there you are. You're addicted.
Wow.
Now, once you're addicted, there are things called associated cues. So you don't have to actually eat the oat flour. You can just see an advertisement for oat flour, or you can see something made from oat flour, and that you'll get that high and crash, and you'll be seeking it compulsively.
Okay, so it's a Pavlovian effect.
Right.
Right. Okay. Right.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It's a Pavlovian response.
Right.
It's Pavlovian conditioning of the reward centers in the brain.
Hmm. Okay. And they do that with marketing, too. With the way they package it and market
it. This is where my business background came in. I just last year published a paper on this. It's the addiction business model.
Hmm.
It's a business model. They use it for cigarettes. They use it for alcohol. They use it for cannabis. The pharmaceutical companies used it to market opiates to doctors. They use it for vaping. It's a business model. It is the addiction business model. The tobacco companies developed it. They honed it. 2/3 of Americans were addicted at the height of smoking. And now, over 2/3 of Americans, including children, are overweight or obese. And it's a specific business model. I call it the 5 A's. Lots and lots of advertising, lots and lots of availability. You know, like they took out the cigarette vending machines and they put in the soda snack machines. Mm-hmm. Available everywhere, within reach of everybody all the time. Affordable. So the tobacco industry didn't come into processed foods until high fructose corn syrup was on the market. Before that, the main ingredient, sugar, was controlled by a cartel. But once they got that cheap sweetener, boom, the cheap sweetener came on the market in the about 1980, and tobacco came and took over Kraft, Nabisco, and General Foods in 85 to 87. So it's got to be a cheap substance because you got to be able to use it often mm-hmm. enough to get addicted to it. Young age of onset. So just like the tobacco industry went after 10-year-old boys with the Joe Camel cartoons, mm-hmm. With processed foods, they could go after newborns. Load up the baby formula, feed it to the mother. So it came through breast milk. 70% sugary breakfast cereals. And they mercilessly went after toddlers. They increased the number of Saturday morning cartoon commercials for processed foods from about 165 to about 565. 565 commercials in one Saturday morning carried to 65 million households by Nickelodeon. Hmm. It's not really very mysterious mm-hmm. how this all came to be. And then the last A, the fifth A, is to ramp up the addictive ingredients, hide addictive ingredients in the product. They hid nicotine, extra nicotine in the cigarettes. They came in, they hired a consultant named Howie Moskowitz, who had a Harvard PhD in experimental psychology and marketing. And he had developed a method for maximizing the amount of sugar, fat, salt in processed foods. So you could eat a slice of bread in 1970 and eat one slice. But by 1990, that slice could have been so loaded up with sugar, fat, salt that you would end up eating the loaf. Because remember, sugar, fat, and salt reach the brain in half a second after touching the mouth. So they're highly addictive. You mm-hmm. could argue that we have a lot of evidence that sugar is more addictive than cocaine mm-hmm. and more destructive, harder on the brain.
I hope
more changes in the brain.
I hope you have a bodyguard. After we post this, there's going to be some people looking for you.
But there's
when I started out, I was still in my MBA head, and I said, I'm a greater threat to world economies than anybody.
Yeah, yes, you are.
The US domestic economy is 1/3 food and health. Mm-hmm. And before tobacco came in to processed foods, it was about 15%. Those two industries were about 15% of the domestic economy. And now they are about 1/3. And they grow in tandem.
Right, right.
Processed food grows and the health industry grows right along with it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really,
it is.
You have to kind of sit down and think of this completely intertwined ball that we're dealing with and how do you untangle it mm-hmm. in order to cure. But we're going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Jean.
Okay. I guess just in general, is the consumption of processed food, is it on the rise, or are we kind of seeing the error of our ways and are we making a marked decrease in the amount we are consuming?
No. So I did look at 2 years. I actually dug down into like the virtual basement of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and got the statistics.
Okay.
And we see a 30, first of all, you can see exactly which substances have increased in use during the rise of obesity.
Okay.
And the big ones are sweeteners, including mm-hmm. high fructose corn syrup, mm-hmm. flours, mostly gluten-containing flours, high-fat dairy, mm-hmm. a cheese and sour cream, and fried potatoes.
Oh, okay.
You see exactly. You can see exactly what's. It's not beans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not brown rice. It's mm-hmm. not meat.
Mm-hmm.
It's these drugs that are being presented as if they were food. So we see like a 30%. I think it was a 30-some% increase between the 2 years I looked at were 1970 and 1997.
Okay.
So yeah, no. I mean, it just keeps rising. Look at the fast food sales.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps rising.
Right, right.
So at that time, in 1997, people were consuming 1.2 pounds per day per person on average. That includes children, of those sugars, flours, high fat dairy, and fried potatoes, French fries.
Wow.
Per day, per person per day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I did not add this to, or Jean didn't add this mm-hmm. to the script,
mm-hmm.
but I have a serious question. I believe that processed foods, and I may be totally off base, I believe that processed foods started because our population has exploded so much and people are not living off the farm anymore. They are living in a city. They have to access food remotely, and the food has to last longer and, you know, shelf life and all that. But how could we possibly fix it now when there are so many people?
Well,
is that too deep of a question for this?
No. This is a super excellent question. I think you're right, Lita. I think the stage was set, all the factors were there, for the tobacco industry to come in and exploit those cultural shifts that you're talking about. But those shifts were there in the 1950s, and we didn't have an explosion of obesity. In 1963, the first tobacco company made the purchase of a sugar product.
Okay.
R.J. Reynolds bought Hawaiian Punch. And this is just so diabolical. It's hard to even listen to it. They repositioned the product. It had been a mixer for adult alcoholic drinks.
Oh.
They repositioned it as a child's drink, and they targeted children, but they brought over all the tobacco marketing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
It's a diabolical technique. First you addict by hiding addictive substances in the product, and then you surround that person with reminders, cues, triggers, messaging, availability. So why did they get 2/3 of Americans to smoke? First they addicted them, you know, here, free 3 cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they surrounded them with reminders. There were logoed products everywhere you went. There was a Marlboro ad. There was a vending machine. They were cheap. You know, cigarettes started out being 5 cents a pack. That's another industry that got off the ground because of a reduction in expense. The rolling machine. So once there was a rolling machine and you could sell cigarettes for 5 cents a pack, it was worth it to advertise and get people addicted.
Mm-hmm.
So you need all five of those elements. You need that low price. You see that happening in tobacco, and now happening in it's happened in processed foods.
Okay.
So I'm going to say that you do have an addiction merchant on the scene to make these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were always addictive opiates, but then the pharmaceutical industry came in and deceptively advertised opiates to doctors. Oh, these aren't addictive. They work really well, and they're not addictive. And so doctors just started writing scripts for them. Oh, they're not addictive. Okay, well, I can prescribe them. No, you know, they were highly addictive. So the pharmaceutical companies hid the addictive nature of the product.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So what do we do now is actually I've been working. You guys know I wrote the textbook.
Yes.
70% of the textbook for the field.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Edited the rest of it. And I really learned from the textbook, this is a severe addiction. I'm sure as I was going through those criteria, most people would say, I've got that one, and they would get up to that 6 threshold. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a severe addiction. Mm-hmm. I love that your program is about diagnoses and new diagnoses. Mm-hmm. This is a new, again, I'm not making a diagnosis, and my website's not making a diagnosis, but we validated it in the my doctoral work. And then there is a full chapter on each one of those diagnostic criteria in the textbook. So I pulled together all the research showing, yes, this does exist in processed food use.
Mm-hmm. Somebody needed to shine. You needed to shine that flashlight on the problem. And you did.
I needed to show the professionals in the world
right.
the evidence.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
They work from evidence.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think the shortest bibliography for one of those chapters is 25 studies, and the longest one is maybe 125.
Wow.
So people have been studying obesity and eating disorders and drug addiction intensely since brain imaging research became available. Mm-hmm. They saw right away that the brains of obese people were doing the same things as the brains of drug addicted people. So there's tons and tons of evidence. Mostly what the textbook does is it just organizes evidence.
Okay.
I didn't do any original research mm-hmm. For the textbook, but I didn't need to.
Right.
What I really did was I took this huge, 2000 jigsaw puzzle piece.
I love it.
And put them together in a picture.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. I love that. Mm-hmm. Joan, are artificial sweeteners a solution or a slippery slope? She asks as she takes a sip of
something that's been sweetened.
Artificial.
Yes. Well, and I could tell when you were over there, when she was listing all, you just kept checking things off and you're like, oh no.
Oh yeah, I know.
Okay. All right.
I am one.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, it will definitely trigger the addictive response. It's mm-hmm. just the taste of sweetness. And it tricks the pancreas. Mm-hmm. So the pancreas thinks, wow, a lot of sugar's coming. It starts putting out insulin to grab that glucose and put it into fat cells. So that you don't get so high on sugar, you could die. Diabetic coma.
Okay.
So there's the pancreas pumping out all this insulin. The insulin's grabbing all the glucose that's there and putting it into fat cells and muscle cells, except there's no sugar. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you get a huge blood glucose drop and you start craving sugar and you will overeat in response to it.
Okay. So that, yeah, it's a bad thing. It's a very, okay, thank you.
And then, Joan, I have to ask the question, what can we do when we have a food craving? And when that food craving hits, what options do we have?
So this is a pretty deep skill set.
Okay.
The skill set of retraining the brain not to crave. Mm-hmm. Or stopping a craving when it occurs. Mm-hmm. And one thing that really helped me is there's a huge body of evidence showing that cravings are triggered by cues.
Okay.
Triggers, mm-hmm. reminders, mm-hmm. stimulation, messaging. So what we do is we train people in 6 broad categories of cueing. And you do one of 2 things with cues. You either avoid them or you teach your brain a different response. So suppose you have somebody in your household who insists on leaving these foods out on the kitchen counter and you're not ready to throw them away yet. You can train your brain to say, instead of saying, oh, that looks so good, to say, oh, that'll give me cancer. You train your brain and it's just like a flashcard. It's just like learning a language. Mm-hmm. It's the same mechanism as you use to learn a language, which is you put I've made other notes on this card. You can see it says cheesecake on this side and on the back, it says uncomfortable, high blood pressure, inability to get down on floor, self-consciousness, shame, depression.
Perfect. I love it.
So now that this was somebody who it was a man. His wife was leaving this food, making big items, dessert items, and leaving them out on the kitchen counter.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, make yourself a flashcard. Dessert, consequences. So what are you doing when you do? It's just Pavlovian conditioning of brain cells, so that when your brain receives that message, oh, look what's available, it goes over to, oh my gosh, that's going to make me so sick. That is going to hurt so bad. Ah! Instead of going over to, oh, that looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And you can train your brain to do that. It's the same thing. Like if you want to travel in France and you want to learn French, when you go to France and you're being stimulated, I'm in France, I'm hearing French all around me. You want to go to the French trained part of your brain where you have, through a flashcard, you put the word car on one side and voiture on the other side. So when you see a car, the word that comes to your mind is not car. The word that comes to mind is voiture. It's just Pavlovian conditioning by association.
Okay.
So I mean, you can do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
with,
right.
Cravings as
right.
Well.
Okay. All right. You mentioned yeah. five, right?
So there are six broad categories okay. of cueing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is just my own work, but mm-hmm. Body, either body shape or body pain, the food itself, all the hidden, I call them drugs, addictive drugs, in the food. It can come from your environment, like advertising in your environment, or any mm-hmm. kind of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have stressful television going on in your household, you'll get cravings from that. It can be relationships. And a really big one that people don't recognize always is loneliness and emotions. People do recognize emotions, but loneliness by itself is so stressful that it can cause cravings. So in our programs, we just work through each of those six categories. Loneliness is pure the moment you walk through the door. I mean, not physical door, but the moment you register for one of our programs, you get this huge release in cravings just from curing the loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just learn, okay, I need to set a boundary in this relationship. I need to drive a different way on the way home so I'm not cued by pictures of fast food or billboards. On and on and on and on. It's a lot of deep skill building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's something we can do. And
it's yeah. little steps.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. There's hope.
Yeah.
Oh
gosh, yes, there's hope.
Yes.
There's a lot of hope. We've had our online recovery community for 3 years. We've tweaked it. We've improved it. We've strengthened it. And now there's, I would say we have a pretty reliable method.
Okay. And Joan, how common is an addict? You know, how common are processed food addictions? Is it like? I mean, from everything you've said, it sounds like it's everyone. Everyone in, you know,
in a developed world.
Right. Right.
This is worldwide. 2 billion mm-hmm. people around the world are overweight or obese. It spread very quickly because the tobacco industry, when it started to get in trouble and lose market in the US, it was able to lean on the State Department, the US State Department, to open markets in other countries. And the tobacco industry went around the world very quickly. It had the relationships with the corner stores mm-hmm. around the world, and it had the advertising relationships.
Okay.
So when it got a hold of processed foods, it was able to just, you know, just push it through those distribution channels, and advertising contracts become less expensive the higher the volume mm-hmm. of advertising. So they put the processed food advertising on top of their existing tobacco contracts. And so they got very, very cheap advertising for these processed foods. And that's why obesity spread around the world so fast, 20 years. And now diet-related diseases are the leading cause of preventable death in the world, in the world. So this is a global problem. But when you think about how does somebody become obese or overweight, they don't want to be.
Right.
So you know they have unintended use. They don't want to eat that stuff. Their brains are screaming, don't eat that. But don't eat that is in the frontal lobe. And the addicted brain cells compete with the frontal lobe and win. It's such a deep addiction because it starts so young and so mm-hmm. many different substances and it's reinforced all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know they all have failure to cut back. And they all have cravings. And they all have a use in spite of knowledge of consequences. And they're very likely eating for reasons other than hunger. And they're spending a lot of time at it. So that's over 70% of the U.S. population likely has a severe addiction. But I think the story that really illustrates this is I had a prepared meal company at one time because it was the wrong model.
Okay.
Before I really appreciated what it means to have a severe addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, I'll just give people clean food and then they'll eat it and they'll feel so much better and then they'll just want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
No. So that's like saying to an alcoholic, look at this great water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drink water, drink water, drink a lot of water and you'll feel so much better and you'll just want to drink water. No, you have to recondition. You have to retrain billions of brain cells. That's just ridiculous. But anyway, we were serving a high-end law firm, and I would call those lawyers at the end of their first week, and they would be, like, puzzled. Be like, so I'm thinking more clearly, and I'm not having that mid-afternoon crash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not craving. Does that have to do with your food plan?
Hmm.
So that was shocking. Mm-hmm. These are the highest performing people in the world, practically. This was a high-end law firm. So they get the cream of the crop from the law schools. And these people were affected. These people came out of an addicted state in their first 5 days of our meal service.
Hmm. Wow.
So it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's
unless somebody's eating this way, I've never, ever gotten somebody on this food plan. Like every one of our meal clients felt better
mm-hmm.
after the first week.
Okay.
All right.
So, I mean, the cool thing is, the exciting thing about that is mm-hmm. that everybody should try this.
Right, right, right.
And yeah, see and if and you feel can't get through it, you know, mm-hmm. if you can't get through it, it's an acute phase of withdrawal, 4 days. If you can't get through that, you know, there are programs where you can go now and get the support to actually conquer this.
Okay. Right. And I mean, this is off topic, but I know we've been to some lovely, you know, we've had lovely spa vacations where everything's fresh and prepared for you. And that can be a nice way to get away from processed foods because
right.
you don't have the triggers there and you are comforted and supported and everything is, but not everyone can do that. And it can
this is an addiction which develops at home.
Mm-hmm. And
place
true.
Triggers are
right.
very, very strong.
Okay.
So you come back to your home
yes.
and your brain says, oh, we right. know what to do here. I don't know what was going on in that other place, but
okay.
we know what to do in this place.
Sure. You're right.
Binge.
You're right. Yes. You're right. You're yes. right.
So you immediately relapse. People spend $50,000 to go to a 5-week residential program, come home, and within 2 or 3 days, they're binging again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So okay, so that leads me to the next question, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best advice for overcoming a processed food addiction? If there is,
okay.
you know, without reading the whole book.
it's a complicated answer that I can boil down to two words. Conformance drive.
Okay.
Probably not what you were thinking right
no.
here.
No,
no.
Conformance drive engagement, what the heck does that mean? So for all the years of human evolution, the people who were able to conform to their band of people, their 7 to 12 people, their tribe, their clan, those people lived. The conformers lived. They ate, they looked for food, they got under shelter, their children were protected, they fought off predators, in a group. They did what the group was doing, kind of like no matter what. The ones that wandered off, they got eaten by the giant hyenas, and they didn't procreate, and their genes did not get passed on. So conformance drive, we have now learned, will overcome the addiction.
Oh.
So conformance drive is the overriding kind of factor in the brain, the overriding system. It's stronger than any other system. But what the food industry has done through the advertising and the availability, and now everybody around us is addicted, they've harnessed our conformance drive to the addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So you can imagine if you were trying to give up smoking, but everybody around you was smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were trying to give up cocaine, but you, all your friends were cocaine users and you still hung out with them. That's why they have AA. They want to get that drinker away from the people, their drinking mm-hmm. buddies, mm-hmm. and into sober buddies. Conformance drive is, in my opinion, the only thing that can overcome an addiction.
That makes a lot of sense. And it also makes sense on why the addiction is there in the first place. Because like you're saying,
yes.
They use that tool to their advantage and we're all stuck. Well, we're not stuck, but we're there. We're stuck momentarily.
We got into where we were at.
Right. We've got to get out of that.
Here's the incredibly good news is that only the frontal lobe, this tiny part of the brain, 2%. It's just this very thin layer of intelligent brain cells are plastered on the front of the other 98% of the brain, which is still operating pretty much the way it was operating a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, the frontal lobe understands screens. The other 98% of the brain does not. So the other 98% of the brain thinks, Lita, that you and I are just sitting straight across from each other. Well, why is that so important? Because the conformance drive is only engaged by people that the brain believes are in its own tribe.
Okay.
So I, you know, my brain thinks, wow, you know, I've been talking to Lita for an hour or whatever, and she must be right here. You know, I should really pay attention to her and see what she's doing and start copying her because she's obviously in our tribe.
Right. Got it.
So screens work for engaging that conformance drive.
Okay.
And that is a huge breakthrough.
Okay. Yeah. So there are tools that maybe people like yourself, hopefully our show, will help other people to find strength together and push forward and succeed, hopefully.
Exactly.
See, this is early in the day, so I can still think. How have your family and friends reacted to your career choice? Just personal question now.
Well, you know, I went to Stanford Business School, as we've talked about. I have a really wonderful group of business school classmates who've been encouraging me for 25 years. I've been in this field now for 25 years.
Okay.
They're real excited for me. They have really remained loyal. Other people have just jumped in and helped me incredibly over the years. And I have to say, honestly, that I know how dangerous it is for me to watch somebody eat processed foods, because it'll trigger those addicted brain cells are going to be addicted the rest of my life. Like, you know how to ride a bike, you know how to ride a bike for the rest of your life. Those brain cells are holding on to that information, you know, waiting for you to rent a bike on vacation, and that there they are, you know, ready to go. The addicted brain cells are the same way. So, you know, my immediate family eats pretty darn clean.
Okay.
And I have to say that I don't have friends who just would invite me to go out for ice cream or something like that. And they know better.
Okay. Well, that's good.
They're not attracted. I mean, they want to be friends with people who are going to go with them joyfully to eat the
right,
whatever.
Right. And well, that's true.
When you're
I guess
really
that's
in
true
the addiction,
with that's,
all your activities
right.
are
That's true with smokers or drinkers. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want somebody around who's right. reminding them that they shouldn't be eating that.
Right, right.
Yeah, my friends are in my recovery community.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Now, that, having said that, let me say this. When we get members into our community, we train them how to stay in relationship with their families and their friends.
Okay.
How to make the processed food use of those people minimal in their minds and make all the other great things about the relationship bigger. This is Al-Anon. So this is incredibly great training that comes out of the people who are in relationship with an alcoholic. You make the alcoholism in that person as small as possible, and you really focus on making other aspects of the relationship fun and interesting.
Okay.
You know, they're sick. They didn't ask to be sick.
Okay.
And so stand by them, help them. Don't let them abuse you, of course. Don't buy into their rationales. Don't let them criticize you. But it's a complicated thing, but we also, that's a skill set. How do you stay in relationship with these people that you love, knowing that they're eating these really destructive substances?
Right, mm-hmm. right. Got it. Hold on. Who's up? Jean.
Oh.
Sorry. What are the advantages?
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I'm just curious, what are the advantages for eliminating or reducing? I mean, you have mentioned several, but if you reduce your consumption of processed foods, what are the advantages of that? I know you said the law firm was a great illustration where mm-hmm. they saw, you know, results within a week.
And I have another question to add to that, if I may. How quick do you see the advantages show up?
Good. These are really, really good questions. So an author, Nancy Appleton, maintains a website where she's got studies linking processed foods to a disease, and she's got 141 diseases now. So people ask me all the time, well, do you think my addiction would go away? And mm-hmm. I said, probably, but let's find out for sure.
Okay.
So how fast do these diseases go? So what are we talking about? The ones that everybody knows are diet-related: diabetes, obesity, heart disease, high blood pressure. Everybody knows those are diet-related. So diabetes can start improving after the first meal. So what you're doing is you're regulating glucose release through the foods and the combinations on your plate. I have a really good story about this. I was demoing our prepared meals out in a corporation one day. And this guy came out, got a free meal for lunch, and he came back a couple of hours later, and he looked like in a state of complete shock. He said, I have been fighting a losing battle with diabetes for 20 years, and I have a pump implanted, and I follow my diabetes educator's advice strictly, and I am getting sicker and sicker. He has to check his blood glucose every hour. He said, my blood glucose has been steady all afternoon. So what the heck is going on with these meals?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're stabilizing glucose because you don't have any carbohydrate that's going to get into the blood system too fast, well, you've got stable blood glucose. So he got on the meal plan, and after a couple of weeks, his doctor begged him to stop exercising. He said, I don't know how to keep up with reducing your medications.
Wow.
Yeah. Shock.
Yeah. So this is a message I hope reaches every diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
The type 2 diabetes can be put into remission. Type 1 diabetes can be stabilized so that the amount of insulin that you're using is vastly reduced. The control is much, much better. Okay, so you've got the obvious ones. The not so obvious ones are cognitive impairment.
Mm-hmm.
That is attention deficit, learning difficulties, poor decision-making, poor impulse control, and memory loss.
Yeah, thank you. Let's hit that.
Pulling the blood flow to the addicted brain cells. It's depriving the frontal lobe of blood flow.
Oh.
So that is something that people notice within 4 days. I'm thinking more clearly.
Wow.
All of these foods are inflammatory. So they inflame the brain. I think that's probably the basis for the release from brain fog. Yeah, so you've got all the mental, you know, the intellectual impairments get better. And that can take some time, depending on how much the person has been using for how long. But we have a couple of people coming out of attention deficit right now. They just gradually, over a year or so, have noticed that they're thinking in a linear kind of way. The emotional, the depression, irritability, anxiety, and shame issues, they also get better. So these addictions kind of wear out the feel-good pathways in the brain. Those reward pathways are the feel-good pathways, mm-hmm. the pleasure pathways. And under this bombardment, constant bombardment, the receptors for those neurotransmitters collapse. And you can see it on a brain scan, clear as day. They come back. Those receptors will open again. You back off the bombardment and they will open up again. So we see vast improvement in depression, irritability, anxiety, and shame issues, chemically based. Sheer chemical. Processed foods, like all drugs, elevate adrenaline levels. That's why my raging got so much better.
Okay.
It's because my adrenaline levels went back to normal. I wasn't afraid and I wasn't angry, chemically driven. So there's a whole range of emotional disorders that just kind of fade away over time. Plus you're in a community, so all the stress from loneliness is reduced.
Mm-hmm.
Irritable bowel syndrome, infertility, heart disease, all the respiratory, sleep disorders, they all get better because there are basically four systematic problems that processed foods cause. One is inflammation. Two is hormone disruption. Three is digestion disruption. And then four are the changes in brain function. And they all, it's just amazing. It's the most beautiful thing because everybody's hardwiring, everybody's factory settings are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take off this burden and you surround them with caring people and they start to think caring things about themselves, they're copying caring behavior. Can I just say this? And I hope this doesn't sound over the top, but in 25 years of doing this, the only thing that does not get better is for something that's been surgically removed.
Oh.
We cannot grow back a thyroid.
Right, right, right.
We cannot grow back a bariatric surgery stomach. But everything else, I can't grow back a gallbladder. Everything else just gets back to normal. It's amazing. And it makes it so much fun. I mean, I remember thinking 25 years ago when I just got off of sugars and flowers, it's what I said, felt like winning the lottery every day. I couldn't wait to get to my support group. I'm just one meeting a week. Now we have 12 hours a day. Out of every 24 hours, we provide 12 hours of live programming. There's a live trained expert person. Either on the screen or on the phone.
Wow.
It's because that really speeds up the conformance drive engagement.
Okay.
People will swing over and they'll start conforming to the arc sometimes within 3 or 4 days.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
It's fun. It's so fun.
Right, right.
People have been told, you know, my back pain is for a lifetime. I just have to manage it. And then it goes away because it was actually due to swelling. Oh, this is not going to get better. It's because of an accident. And then the pain goes away because, yes, there's something out of line there, but it only hurts because it's swollen. It's so much fun.
That's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
I know you were mentioning it's similar to Al-Anon. How could I support someone? Let's say that I don't have a processed food addiction, which I do. Let's say I don't.
Sure.
How could I support someone that does have one?
This is a brilliant question. And I don't get this question often enough, so thank you for asking it. You control the queuing in the inside the household.
Okay.
You make clean food, and you fill the air with the smell of that clean food. You fill up that crock pot with ground turkey and black beans and tomatoes and onions and peppers. You put in that chili powder and you cook that for 12 hours. You make a wonderful beef stew or chicken stew.
Okay.
And you just let that cook for 12 hours. You fill that household because for, you know, all the millions of years of human evolution, if food was available, you ate it.
Mm-hmm.
If food was available, your food seeking brain would make sure that that was the food you wanted. So availability is a huge part. And you never have to say anything.
You
can offer it.
Right.
I've got this great turkey chili here. And maybe they'll go straight past you and go out the door and go get the fast food. It might take a couple of years. But so food availability and food smell. The sense of smell is the only part of the brain that is exposed to air. So that particulate, you know, the little microscopic particle of smell in the air lands directly on a neuron. Eyes, ears, everything else has a nerve that it has to travel before it reaches the brain. Smells touch the brain directly. So smells in the house are very, very powerful. Media programming, stress. Like just if that person insists on watching stressful TV and all TV is stressful, stress activates the addiction. The stress pathway and the addiction pathway are just lie very close together. So when you twing the stress, it dings the addiction and off you go. So just like, you know what, darling, I'm not going to watch stressful TV with you anymore. I love you to pieces, but I'm going to be right over here at this table working a puzzle. I'm going to be doing the laundry or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to watch stressful TV with you anymore. Well, everybody else in your household has mirror neurons too, and you are closest to them. So after a while, their mirror neurons are going, uh-oh, our tribe's not watching TV. They're working a puzzle. Oh, we should probably go over and work that puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or else the hyenas will get us, you know.
Right.
It's primitive thinking.
Right.
So that's another big thing. And then not eating processed foods with them.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And a big one is to finally persuade them to, if they need to keep processed foods in the house, to keep them in the trunk of their car.
Oh.
Locked.
Okay.
So that you create a little bit of a barrier for them. And you can say this, you know, like, I don't want to be triggered by mm-hmm. having it available. So if you want to have it available, you got to lock it up in the trunk of your car.
Okay.
They're not seeing it. Seeing things is a huge trigger. So you would help people by not allowing it in your house. If it is going to have to be in your house, because they're adults, they live there, they got to lock it in the trunk of their car. So remember one of the five A's is availability.
Right,
you're
right.
Working on you can work the availability angle a lot.
Okay.
Get the cookbooks put out of sight because cookbooks are big triggers. Get any kind of magazine out of sight. You know, just stop those subscriptions to those food porn publications.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So become aware of the advertising. If you have small children, don't let those processed food toys in the house. Those are diabolical triggers for small children. Just go through and get anything that's got a logo on it out of the house. And then if it's small children, they don't get a choice.
Okay.
The idea, this is the most diabolical, sick thing. You've got an addicted child.
Mm-hmm.
So the addicted brain cells are controlling behavior. And then the food industry comes along and says, they should have a choice. They don't have a choice. The choice brain cells are being deprived of blood flow. That child doesn't have a choice. So as parents, we protect our children from all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
We need to protect them from the food industry.
Well, and that leads me to my question. How can parents encourage their children to eat less processed foods?
It's a pretty cool thing. So you never fight with children.
Okay.
You know, but you don't want to fight with them because you don't want to give them, you know, an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the cool thing. You're only feeding them clean food at home. Like, I have this really facetious thing I was saying around the spring holidays, which is, well, sugar is worse and more destructive than cocaine. So don't give your children sugar until you've run out of cocaine.
Oh, boy.
Just like trying to get it through.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so yeah, don't give it to them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I can remember where I was standing practically, where I thought, okay, I'm giving my children substances that make them irritable with me. I think I'll stop doing that. It just, the light bulbs come on gradually. Mm-hmm. You have to give this a lot of time.
Right.
And a lot of light. Right. I'm not ready to think about that right now. Maybe in a couple of months, I'll be able to think about that. A lot of time, a lot of patience. We have all the time in the world. Slow and steady wins the race. Parents do different things. They'll just like let things run out. They'll just let things run out. And then they won't replace them. My children were thrilled because this witch, this really raging, critical, mean person left, and a nice person came in her place.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat down with her, I said, I'm not going to keep these things in the house anymore. They're like, Mom, anything we can do to help you? You want us to get, why do you want us to get out of the house? We'll do it right now. So they saw the results, and okay, they were highly motivated.
Okay.
And then their results were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So don't talk about it incessantly. Your children are going to go through withdrawal, which is absolutely heartbreaking. They will be throwing themselves on the kitchen floor. They will be screaming how much they hate you. But just, you know, register. I'm sorry you're going through this. It's withdrawal. And I'm really sorry. But no, we're not going to go to a fast food outlet and get you a fast food meal. There's good food right here. They might not eat for 4 days. They're not going to die. You just got to wait it out. So something else happens with drug addiction. It also competes with natural food seeking. So children who, the parents say they're a picky eater, they'll only eat Kraft mac and cheese or something. That's a deeply addicted child. And you need to get all the reminders of Kraft mac and cheese out of the house, anything else that they could just ship the addiction to, and start putting out clean food. And you get a new child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the coolest thing. Like, my children were BC students. They would start to try to study, and then they would end up fighting with each other and going to their rooms, and it was a disaster. And after we got them off these drugs, they just sat and did their homework. Their grades went up. I didn't, you know, I had a lot of fun with them, but you get these highly successful, easy to manage, very interesting, nice energy, not interested in TV kind of children.
Mm-hmm.
The reward is you just get these really fun children. They're not having meltdowns. They're not screaming at you. They're not fighting with each other. I mean, the fighting in our household, I quit fighting with my husband. He quit fighting with me. We stopped fighting with the kids, and the kids stopped fighting with each other.
Yeah,
it just became a completely different household.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great.
That is success.
Mm-hmm.
So do we go on to the tips, hints, and tricks lightning round segment of the show?
Like a game show?
All righty. Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
10-question lightning round, Joan. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, just going to be quick answers, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. What is in your go bag? Do you know what a go bag is? I should have described this.
It's an apple and sliced turkey.
Thank you.
Oh,
great.
Peppered turkey.
Peppered turkey, okay.
Great answer.
What makes traveling easier when you're trying to avoid processed foods?
Cooking all your food the night before and packing it in the bag in the refrigerator. Meatballs are great travel food.
Okay. Oh,
that's a fun answer. 10 points.
Yeah. The food's fantastic.
All right. What is your go-to snack meal, like in between meals?
An apple and a sliced turkey, or an apple and a drumstick, or a cup of berries. And some sliced beef. Yeah, something that I have made myself. Like, I brought home the roast beef and I cooked it, so I know what's in it.
Okay.
2 ounces of protein Or plant proteins, like a half cup of quinoa and a low sugar fruit.
Okay. That's, yeah, great.
All right. Do you have tricks for swallowing medicine or for taking your pills on time? Just a
general question.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to find your doctor taking you off those medications.
Okay.
There you go. That's a great good answer. Best answer yet.
And if your doctor doesn't know how to de-prescribe, just ask around until you find one who does. And a lot of doctors don't. They know how to put you on, but they don't know how to get you off.
Oh, geez.
All right. What do you always bring with you when you go to the doctor?
My insurance card.
Okay. All right. Sure. All right. Okay. Great answer.
Well, I mean, I get these annual checkups and everything's fine. I'm 69 years old and everything's still fine. I have asthma from having smoked, but no.
Okay.
Yeah. Boring.
No, that's good because you're a living example.
Right. What do you use as a distraction during treatment or testing?
This is, I think, really important because people go through treatment and testing and it's so stressful that it triggers cravings.
Mm-hmm.
They leave the doctor's office and they go straight for the bakery.
Yes.
So meditation, it's, I use a light meditation, light in a couple of different ways, but I imagine that light is coming out of my brain.
Okay.
It does release the calming pleasure neurotransmitters, but in a really gentle way that's going to last for hours. The light meditation.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm.
Good.
And that's it. It's so simple. You just imagine that light is coming out of your head.
What color light?
Just like a warm yellow, glowy kind of light.
All right.
Okay.
How do you work through a pain flare?
Same way. That light meditation is actually releasing opiates in the brain. And if you concentrate, like your finger is burnt, if you concentrate on making light come out of your finger, those opiate neurotransmitters travel across the brain to the nerve endings for that finger.
Oh, okay. We'll have to
give
that one a try.
It's your own natural painkiller, and it works. It's worth practicing.
Mm-hmm.
The more you practice it, the more effective it becomes.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Give us three of your favorite recreational pursuits.
Okay. I love to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Walking, by the way, stops cravings.
Okay.
Love to play with my grandchildren.
Aww.
Me too.
Yes, of course. And I love reading. I'm here at my desk. I'm stacked up with reading all over the place.
Okay. All right. What animal best reflects your personality?
I don't know why, but I am a great blue heron.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
How do you?
I don't know.
What do you do to treat yourself?
I will read. I'll get into the bathtub before I go to bed and read for 15 minutes.
Okay.
Wonderful. Great. Well, we definitely have a winner today, and we really appreciate all of the information that you've given us today. I know Lita is going to be changing her lifestyle rather radically pretty soon because of all of your advice.
She could tell by the look on my face
that I'm absorbing it all. The copious notes.
Yes.
But Joan, how can our listeners learn more about you and your program?
Thank you. I would recommend the first thing your listeners do is go to Food Addiction Reset and take the self-quiz.
Okay. We'll have a link for that on our website too.
Yeah.
All right.
And
I did have another question.
You
mentioned, hold on, I got to go back to my notes that Jean said were copious.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, they are. You mentioned Nancy has a website that lists 141 diseases. What is that website?
Oh, no, the website. One of my employees told me about it because I asked her to go and look, and she said, yeah, it's 141. But if you can, you know, we have a free Facebook group.
Okay.
Food Addiction Education. And now we have a centralized, where all of our services are in one website. And that website is processedfoodaddiction.com.
Okay.
So, I do a lot of free stuff. I mean, I had the grace. My father had just died, so I had enough inherited money to sit for 3 years and write this textbook.
Well, that was nice.
And that's my gift back to the universe. You go on processfoodaddiction.com, and the very first segment has links to a bunch of free stuff.
Great, great. Thank
you
very much.
We've got a YouTube channel. We've got a page, a free page of handouts. We have a lot of free stuff.
Great.
So wonderful.
I will be using that myself.
But I don't want to delude people. You need to be in a community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because you've got to get that conformance tribe switched over and then keep it switched over.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yep.
So that's, you can start that community research at foodaddictionreset.com.
Okay. Thank
wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for joining our show. This was absolutely a pleasure.
This was really a great interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great questions, and your hearts are so in the right place. And I appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, we've definitely learned a lot from this episode, and we're going to be taking it to heart for sure.
Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking the time out of your day. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Thank you. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.